Ooh, thinking. We have a meeting to go over our client list on Thursday. And after that, I suppose we'll operate as though we're both working there forever, knowing that one of our contracts probably won't be renewed. New York was brought up, but I don't know. Daryl blanches. You'd move? Hell no. But P&D has huge resources. I don't want to burn any bridges until I have to. And Carter has huge resources, too? At the meaningful tilt to Daryl's words, Amelia high-fives her. My phone lights up on the table, and we all look down to see Carter's name. Oh, shit, Daryl whispers. It's like he knows. I stare at it as it rings and rings. Amelia sighs. Will you answer that damn phone? I lift it, swiping my thumb across the screen. Hey, Carter.
Hey.
Standing, I walk to a quiet corner of the restaurant near the windows.
How are you holding up?
He asks. I laugh, tracing my finger along the windowsill. I'm working my way through the Post and Beam appetizer menu, so I'm doing okay. Carter laughs now, too, and I realize when he does how awkward and unmirthful both of us have sounded.
Look, I was still sort of in reaction mode when you asked me about lunch and was probably a bit shorter than I meant to be. I know it's crazy, but I don't want this to get in the way of what was starting with us, you know?
I nod, but struggle to think of what to say in response. It's so complicated now. I know, I say finally. You give good makeout.
So do you.
He's quiet for a few breaths.
Do you think we're competing for this job?
Brad sure made it sound that way. I don't know that we need to, though. I think we can figure out how to both be indispensable.
Let's just make sure we communicate, he says. If we stay open with each other, we'll be fine, right?
I squeak out a limply enthusiastic, sure. And after a few more small words, we agree to talk tomorrow. It feels like we're standing on the deck of the Titanic as it goes down, saying, it's gonna bob back up any second now. Date. Wednesday, October 14th at 5:03 a.m. From Bradley Kingman to Amy Miller, Dudley Thompson, John Feynman, Timothy Brown, Andrew Murphy, Carter Aaron, Evelyn Abbey, Rose McCullough, Ashton Garcia. Subject, Dan Prince. Flagged, highly confidential.
Team, I received word last night that Dan Prince is leaving his current representation at Loramac. Anyone think they can snare him? Let me know and I'll set up a meeting. This is a $5 million a year potential client for us. Evie handled his screenwriting credit over at Alterman a few years back, so I'm leaning that way. Jump in with any objections by 9 a.m.
Date, Wednesday, October 14th at 5:07 a.m. From Carter Aaron to Bradley Kingman, CC, Amy Miller, Dudley Thompson, John Feynman, Timothy Brown, Andrew Murphy, Evelyn Abbey, Rose McCullough, Ashton Garcia. Subject, regarding Dan Prince.
Let me take a shot at this one, Brad. We have a mutual friend in New York. C.
Date, Wednesday, October 14th at 5:08 a.m. From Evelyn Abbey to Bradley Kingman. Subject, regarding Dan Prince. I'm happy to keep working with Dan. He and I had a great relationship, and I'm confident I could get him to move over. Thanks, Evie. Date, Wednesday, October 14th at 5:08 a.m. From Evelyn Abbey to Bradley Kingman, CC Carter Aaron. Subject regarding Dan Prince. Carter and I must have replied at the same time. Looks like we're both happy to take him onto our list. Perhaps this is a good opportunity for a team representation strategy. Let's discuss today. Evie. Date, Wednesday, October 14th at 5:43 a.m. From Bradley Kingman. To Amy Miller, Dudley Thompson, John Feynman, Timothy Brown, Andrew Murphy, Carter Aaron, Evelyn Abbey, Rose McCullough, Ashton Garcia. Subject, Dan Prince.
Early bird gets the worm, and good timing, Carter. Joanne just called. Dan will be named People's Sexiest Man Alive, not announced yet. Would be a huge get for us. Carter, Kylie will set up a one-on-one meeting for you and Dan this week. Great job. Brad.
Chapter 10. Carter. Thursday afternoon, Michael Christopher sits at a table in the courtyard outside P&D. The sun is shining overhead, the sky is blue without a single cloud in sight, and he waits, eating his peanut butter and jelly sandwich, while I pace. Labeling the current situation tense would be like calling Usain Bolt fast. Although most of the higher-ups seem thrilled with the merge because it makes P&D this enormous conglomerate monster, the rest of us are a flock of anxious birds, eyeing one another as if we're all plotting not only to take each other's jobs, but also eat each other's children. The situation with Evie isn't any better. We went from this budding thing to sharing one of the hottest nights I've ever had, to clipped conversations as we pass in the hall at work. After our conversation on Tuesday night, I figured we would band together and talk this through. But she's been so busy with meetings, I barely saw her yesterday. All week, really. And as much as I'd like to hope we are starting on equal footing with Brad, I know that isn't the reality. I don't think I'm wrong in my sense that he really liked me, and in my read that there's some old animosity between them. But she's also worked for him for years. Not to mention that she has the benefit of all her local contacts. I also get the sense that she's aligning with a group of select colleagues and setting up an artillery in this position, hoping to be invaluable. But didn't we agree we could work together? "Can you sit down and eat something?" Michael says. "I'm going to need a Dramamine if I keep watching you." I push my hands into my pockets and make my way to the bench beside him. He pulls something from a brown paper bag and slides it and a Ziploc full of potato chips across to me. "Eat." I look down. Grape jelly, diagonal cut. "You made me lunch?" He shrugs and takes another bite. "I knew you were preoccupied." "Thanks." "I'm guessing there's been no update?" I'd gone straight from work to Michael and Steph's on Tuesday night, and in what had to resemble some sort of manic episode, I'd told them everything I knew about the merge, including the meeting where Brad dropped a bomb on us. Neither of them knew what to say, and I couldn't exactly blame them. "Hello, shitty situation, with no good solution." So after I called Evie, I decided to stay at their place for a Buffy marathon, and somehow managed to eat an entire coconut cream pie. "No update," I tell him, setting my food down and leaning my elbows on the table. "I do know that Brad doesn't like Evie," Michael says, "and yet he keeps her around like it's some kind of game." "That sounds about right. He had the nerve to bring up field day right there in front of me. Sort of a dick move," I groan, pressing my forehead to the table. "I really liked her, Michael. No, present tense. I like her. There is no angle where this doesn't suck." "I know, man." He reaches over to give my shoulder a reassuring squeeze. I sit up again, looking over the grass and the cars moving along the street in the distance. Michael is quiet for a moment and taps his fingers against his thigh. "There's really only one thing you can do," he finally says. "You're going to have to get rid of her." "Get rid of her?" He nods, taking a huge bite of sandwich. "Make her look incompetent." I gape at him. "What kind of asinine plan is that? I like her." He blinks, watching me as he chews. "Besides," I continue, "Brad might have tried to throw her under the bus a little, but he also made sure I knew what I was up against. No one is going to think she's incompetent." He stares blankly at me, which only makes me explode. "Not to mention she's your friend too, jackass." He pops a chip in his mouth with a satisfied grin. "Christ, I know you so well. You're such a Boy Scout, Aaron. I just wanted to make sure we were on the same page." I stare at him. "Thank God you brought me lunch, because otherwise you're quickly veering out of helpful territory." He laughs, wiping his mouth with a pink paper napkin. "Look, you like Evie. She likes you. You're both problem solvers, and if anyone can find a way to coexist, it's you two. Show these guys they're wrong, that they need you both. Isn't that what agents do anyways? Talk people into things they're not sure they want?"
"That's literally the opposite of what agents do. Do you ever listen to your wife when she talks about work?"
"Whatever. Do whatever it is that you guys do. Save your job. Get the girl."
I ball up my bag of chips and throw it at him.
"You're an idiot."
"Keeps people guessing."
I stand, picking up my trash and walking to the bin, tossing it all inside.
"Save your job, get the girl. He might be an idiot, but the thing is, a part of me can't help but wonder if maybe this time he's right."
After lunch, I head back inside, bidding a tragic farewell to both Michael Christopher and the perfect sunny day. I'm still learning my way around a new office, memorizing names and positions, getting a read on who I need to keep close and who I need to keep closer. The building smells of fresh paint and carpet cleaner, and relative to CTM's funky 1970s vibe, everything here feels new, new, new. My steps are accompanied by the steady hum of voices, the ringing of phones, and the clicking of keyboards. In New York, we could always hear the traffic, even 12 floors up. It was the ever-present backing track to each conversation, the sound we fell asleep to every night. It grew so familiar that aside from the occasional horn or siren, it'd be easy to forget there were cars outside the building at all. At CTM, we were just beside a fire station, and the sound of the siren turning on and wailing out of the gate became so familiar, we never even remarked upon it when we'd stop talking mid-sentence in the conference room, waiting for quiet to return. Here, it's quieter, and yet it feels louder. The lack of street noise inside the fancy double-paned windows makes every other interior noise stand out. And as I walk into my office, I'm reminded again that the view couldn't be more different, too. She's not there now, but Evie's office is just across the hall. I've noticed she likes to meet with clients at the little couch and chair just inside the door, and if I bend to reach the garbage can, coincidentally, not on purpose, of course, I can just see her legs through the glass, the way she crosses them, the way she... The new assistant on my desk, Justin, knocks on my door before peeking in. I inherited him from a P&D agent who was cut loose, and he's a bit like a rescue dog brought home from the shelter. If he's still here, he's obviously considered good, but we're working out a rhythm. He's excitable, seems like the kind of guy who would use emojis in lieu of words and texts, and uses we when referencing anything on my to-do list. We have a call with Patricia at Fox at 11. We have a 1 o'clock lunch with Peter in legal. We'll just make a note here that we need to talk to Brad about this. He's also not Becca. I took a long shot and asked if there was any way to retain her. There wasn't. Apparently mergers don't work that way. Becca used to argue with me, and she was right 98% of the time. Becca would snap in my face when I wasn't paying attention and yell at me for leaving my empty coffee cups around. Becca would fix my grammar on post-it notes. Becca and her loopy script I could never decipher. I miss Becca. You're back, Justin says as he walks into my office. Like most of the interns and assistants here, he's barely old enough to drink and looks like he just stepped out of a Topman ad. Hey, yeah. With my hands on my hips, I survey the newly unpacked office. Feels so empty. Good lunch? Just met a friend. We've had a few people stop by. He looks down at his notes. Angela from Literary, Esther from Legal, Amy from... He stops, eyes narrowing. There are a lot of women on this list. Listen, I say, and walk to the door, satisfied that nobody is within earshot. I close it quietly behind me. Do you know where Evie is? Evelyn? Miss Abby? He asks formally, and I nod. Justin jogs out of the room and comes back about 20 seconds later. Jess said she had a lunch meeting and isn't back yet. Jess? Her assistant. Right. I feel twisted inside and want to sit down with Evie sooner rather than later. We're meeting with Brad to review our client lists this afternoon, and I would prefer we go into that with a united front, rather than under a cloud of miscommunication and awkward silence. Do me a favor and let me know when she's back, okay? We have that meeting with Joanne in about 5 minutes, he reminds me. I give him a few seconds to hear the echo of that sentence, but he doesn't seem to regret his odd assistant speak. Thanks, Justin, I say. I'm headed down there now. Just send me a text if you see Evie. Justin's eyes widen at the prospect of being given a specific task, and it makes me feel bad for him for a beat. Mergers are terrible enough, but with a boss who doesn't quite have his sea legs yet, torture. Absolutely, he says eagerly. I'll keep an eye out and text you the minute I see her back. Have a good meeting. He turns to leave and then stops by the door. Oh, and if you don't catch Miss Abby before, remember the two of you have a meeting with Brad at 2. As if I could forget. I go into my meeting with Joanne trying to feel optimistic. Under normal circumstances, I would be floating on confidence. I know I'm outgoing and a good coworker. Everyone I've spoken to at P&D has been welcoming, excited, and enthusiastic about what I can offer this new combined firm. I know that Joanne has been based in the LA office, but transitioned to television in New York a few years ago. The rumor is she moved because Brad didn't play well with female others, and having seen him firsthand with Evie, I'm inclined to agree. Given that Joanne is just as senior as he is, I wonder whether it was his decision she be moved, or hers. Hollywood is a world of big dogs and small pens. Unfortunately, my feeling of optimism doesn't last. This was a basic get-to-know-you, where all Joanne has to go on is what she sees in my portfolio, what she's found on the web, or what she's heard from Brad. But Joanne clearly knows Evie, clearly likes Evie. Where I might have felt I had some sort of edge with Brad, in the dude-bro sense, which I don't really prefer anyway, that edge is clearly absent here. Joanne impresses upon me how lucky I am to be working with Evie, how great and well-respected she is, how much I can learn from her. Basically, there's a whole lot of Evie is awesome happening today, and it's only 1 o'clock. With my stomach feeling like it's bottomed out somewhere near my knees, I get a text from Justin on my way to the meeting with Brad, telling me that Evie came in, dropped her things off, and is already in the conference room waiting. Shit, so much for strategizing first. It's becoming clear that Evie has one hell of an upper hand. Not only is she smart and beautiful and fucking great at her job, but she's got the executive singing her praises. I definitely have my work cut out for me. Rounding the corner, I spot her as soon as I walk in. It doesn't matter how many times I see her. I'm always surprised by how gorgeous she is. Like I forget somehow when we're apart. Her dark hair is piled on top of her head, and she's in a fitted sweater vest with a long-sleeved shirt underneath. She's wearing a skirt, and as I slip into the seat next to her, I take superhuman strength not to let my eyes, or hands, follow the length of her legs below the table. I can imagine how she'd look spread out on top of it, maybe pressed against the wall of the window. Focus, Carter. Eyes on the prize. Other than the occasional quick hello in the hallway as we pass, we haven't spoken since our brief phone call Tuesday night. I mean, obviously, that's a little weird, given that less than a week ago I had my hand in her underwear and was already planning on when I could enjoy that again. Brad hasn't joined us yet, so we're all alone in here, but just in case, I keep my voice low. I was wondering if you wanted to go out tonight, get dinner, strategize? She finishes what she was writing and looks over to me. I envy her mask of calm as she quickly glances around. I'm close, but not too close. Definitely not encroaching on her space, but maybe giving her the hint that I'd still really, really like to. Dinner? She repeats. I can tell her pulse has picked up. Her eyes dilate as we continue to stare at each other. You want to have dinner? It's like dropping a match in a puddle of gasoline, and even though I know I shouldn't, I want to lean in, press my mouth to her neck. Yeah, if you're not busy. I swallow, working to keep my eyes on hers and not let them wander down to her mouth. Looking at her mouth could lead to remembering her mouth, which could lead to further imaginings of her mouth, and that would be a very, very bad idea. Evie pulls out her phone and checks her calendar, her brows drawn together while she scrolls. I have a meeting at 5. What do you mean by strategize? Strategize what?
Strategize you on top of me?
Brad picks this exact moment to walk into the room. He takes a seat and shuffles a few papers in front of him before looking up at us.
Evie, Carter, how are you doing? Playing nice?
I can only wonder if Evie's reaction is the same as mine. An internal, what the fuck? Sure. We both say, and I feel her foot nudge me slightly beneath the table. And yes, this is what we need. Us against them, a united front. I bite back my smile. We can do this, I have no doubt. Kylie walks in, setting a stack of files down in front of Brad, and he slips his glasses on as he opens the first one.
Okay, great, he says absently, and I know we could have said, we're doing pretty shitty, Brad. You've put us both on edge. A week ago we were cruising down the road toward a stellar bang, but now we're trying to seek out each other's weaknesses and exploit them.
And he would have had the same reaction.
Brad really is a dick.
I'm glad Evie gave him that dog food bar.
We're going to talk about clients today, he says, flipping the tops of a few pages down as he riffles through the client sheets. There will probably be a few more, but right now we're just here for the big ones. He looks up at me. Carter, you're going to work on Dan Prince, correct?
I nod. I've already reached out to his team. We're playing phone tag.
I feel Evie shift beside me, and there's something about her posture, some stiffness that wasn't there only a few seconds ago. Her foot is no longer pressed to mine, and out of the corner of my eye I see her slowly fold her hands across her middle. Is she pissed that I stepped up to try for Dan Prince? My chest seems to sink in as the sequence of emails unscrolls in my memory. Evie emailed, throwing her hat in the ring as well, and Brad handed him over to me. At the time, it was only one string of emails in the hysterical post-merge blur of my inbox, but now it occurs to me Evie probably saw my email as completely underhanded. Oh, shit. Was it? Wouldn't she have done the same? I blink into focus, catching what Brad is already saying. Assume you have people who will transition here from CTM, including Emil and a few others, so for the time being, I want to start you slowly. Focus on reassuring everyone that it's business as usual. But adding Dan would be a big coup. He sorts through a few papers and glances up at me, and I nod, letting him know I've heard him. He looks back down again. The first new player on your list of P&D clients will be Jet Payne. Jet starred in a few indies and was added to MTV's biggest series a few years ago. His character was killed off in the finale when he was offered a larger part with a network show, and in my opinion, he's primed to blow up. Your TV experience will come in handy, but talk to Joanne about him. She's helped folks transition back and forth there. He slides the file across to me and I scan it, jotting down a few notes. Dan is a heavy hitter in features. Jet is an up-and-comer. So far, so good. Next for you, Carter, is Jamie Huang, reality show darling. It's impossible to miss the mocking in his tone, but outwardly, I ignore it. Reality television is one of the largest markets in the 18 to 29 demographic, and Jamie's show consistently runs in the top five. She has a huge social media presence, and while that means nothing if people don't show up and buy the thing you're selling, from what I've gathered, her fans do. A friend of mine met her briefly and mentioned that she was eager to move into film. Jamie's manager is Allie... He searches his notes. Allie Brin. She's good. Jamie has had a fast rise and a wild online following, but she's dumb as a bag of sand. Evie clears her throat, meaningfully, but Brad doesn't seem to notice. Allie keeps her in line, and her main job is to get Jamie to do whatever you want her to do. Got it, I say, noting Allie's name. I've worked with managers extensively in the past. For the most part, they make my job easier. Alex Young is one of our biggest clients, Carter, and I think he'd do well on your list, Brad continues, and I feel my heart speed up. Alex is a singer-songwriter whose breakout album debuted at number 2 in the UK, and he's poised to become a massive US star. My palms are sweating. I'm giving him to you because of your theater and music background in New York. You'll be working in collaboration with the music team here, and I'll get that over to you, but people are poking around him for features. Personally, I think there's no rush there, and you can be picky. You'll have fewer clients than Evie at first, but I think Alex is going to be right up your alley. I take a moment to glance from Alex's file to Evie, and she looks impressed. We can do this, I think. We have complementary strengths, and we can sell Brad on the idea of us as a team. A wild little part of me daydreams that we could become something like our own specialized sub-department if we mesh really well. Have your assistant get me your current list, only the folks who are sticking around after this merge, and we'll update and go from there, Brad says, and I nod, reaching for my phone and firing off a message to Justin. Evie, Brad says, and she straightens in her chair. I know you've got a pretty heavy list already and are working on contracts for Adam Elliott and Sarah Hill. That's amazing. He shakes his head and seems to add somewhat begrudgingly. Well, I'm thrilled. Great. Both Adam and Sarah are A-listers, already chest-deep in the industry. Brad glances back to Evie's folder, open in front of him. The first one I'm going to give to you is Marianne Isaac. I hate the way my first response to this is to want to laugh, because although Marianne will bring in a ton of money, it'll be no picnic for Evie. Marianne is a model-turned-A-list actress who's known for being a nightmare. She's demanding, she's often rude to interviewers and fans, and some of her screaming matches with her last director are legendary. I'm not surprised some other agent used the merge as an excuse to trade her off. Evie nods, expression largely unreadable, but I'll admit she doesn't look particularly surprised. Evie could talk a grenade out of exploding, Brad had said. This is exactly what he meant. She was recently dropped from Lorimac, Evie says.
That's right, Brad laughs. She made them $3 million last year, and they still dropped her like a hot potato.
Who was handling her before? She asks.
Chad, Brad gives a sardonic grin. He was happy to pass her off.
Oh, I'm sure he was, Evie laughs knowingly, and something itches inside me to enter this banter so I don't continue to feel like the newbie. It's just that I have no idea who Chad is.
Brad leans in, giving her a confident nod. I have zero doubt that you're the one to handle her.
This feels like a sharp stab, and I'm growing uneasy because aside from her current list, he's given her a big name with the probability of signing two more, and all three of these clients are huge commissions. Why the hell was I starting to feel bad about jumping in and taking Dan Prince?
Brad settles in again, looking back to his stack of folders. Next up, Keaton Avery. I'm sure you remember that little tiff he had with the paparazzi last year, so I want to make sure image repair is at the front of your mind.
Her pen slows on the pad in front of her, but she doesn't question or object. Keaton was in an Oscar-nominated film last year and is poised to become the new art house darling.
Fuck. Trent Vaughn, Brad says, just wrapped filming on the final season of Burn Brightly.
I lean back in my chair, feeling feverish. Trent won an Emmy last year.
He's hoping to transition to film, so we'll need to land him something big and fast.
Brad pulls out the final folder in the Evie stack. I feel my blood pressure rise about 10 points and wonder what else he could possibly have.
Last, we have Seamus Aston, YouTuber.
And god damn it. My hands curl into fists in my lap. Evie sits up, leaning her elbows on the table.
Incidentally, Seamus and Jamie starred together in the new Scott film, so the two of you will have promo for that to coordinate. Seamus had 17 million subscribers on his channel, along with pretty much every millennial endorsement you can imagine. And he was just cast in what some are predicting to be the biggest film of next year. But, Brad says and leans back in his chair, he is an epic asshole.
You would know, I think.
As if on cue, Evie reaches for her handbag at her feet and pulls out a small tube of hand cream. Despite how tense things are, I know what she's doing and have to stifle a smile as I watch her squeeze a dollop onto the center of her palm and start vigorously rubbing her hands together.
Not a problem, she says.
This pulls a grin out of Brad. That's what I like to hear, kiddo. Glad you're taking our talk to heart. Team player.
Evie's reputation is as an agent who keeps her cool and can handle divas, but there's something else lurking here. Brad is being so nice to her about it, like he's helping her to the top of a mountain. He's intending to either let her plant the flag or shove her off the sharp ledge on the other side.
I know the scales seem a bit tipped right now, he says to me, but Evie knows this town and the people in it, and like I've said before, it's one thing to land talent, it's another to keep it.
Got it, I say. Yes, Evie has more contacts, experience with features, and several more years in the business than I do, but that doesn't necessarily make her the better agent. Logically, I know that what Brad is saying makes sense, but there's a part of me that can't help but bristle. We end the meeting and begin gathering up our things. My optimism has dissolved. Yes, we can work as a team, and yes, we have complementary skills, but do I want it to appear that I'm learning from her and benefiting from her experience? I'm trying to talk myself down, but my pulse is racing, and I can barely look in her direction. I stall to let Brad and Evie leave the room first, but I'm not surprised to find Evie waiting in the hall when I make it outside. She stops me with a look, leaning back against the wall. She's got a head start in this race, and seems to know it. So, that was interesting. She folds her arms over her chest. That's one word for it. About that strategizing, she says, looking away. Like I said, I have an appointment at 5, but we could still get together afterward. Might be nice to download all of this.
Fuck.
My heart is a hammer against my breastbone. My stomach is a pit of guilt.
You know, I forgot that I told Michael I'd watch Morgan tonight. She has swimming, and I said I'd walk her down to the pool and stay until he's free to pick her up.
Oh, she says, and she knows I'm lying. She knows. Another time.
Of course.
Evie is a master of the calm mask, but I can see the tightness around her eyes. You happy with your list? and the tiny amused tilt to her voice tells me that she wouldn't be if she were me. Yeah, I say. Combined with what I'm bringing, I'll be busy. You? Thrilled, she says and grins. Glad you jumped in on the Dan Prince thing after all. I don't know how I'd find the time for him and Adam, Sarah, Seamus. I pause, trying to hold back my first reaction, to call her out on her passive-aggressive shit. I fail. So you were pissed about my email to Brad about Dan? I wasn't pissed, she says evenly. She was totally pissed. It's just funny that only a few hours before you were calling me to say we should keep our lines of communication open, then you swoop in to grab a client Brad was thinking of giving to me. Is she serious with this? Neither of us likes this situation. Each of us sees the other clearly. At least I think we do. I would still give my small finger to bang her until the sun comes up, but in this moment, when Evie is staring at me like I'm an opponent on the other side of the field, I decide I have to close one door to keep another open. I can't do both things right now. And if I can't get the girl, at least I can keep the job. I did keep our line of communication open, I tell her. I CC'd you on the email, didn't I? It was all in plain sight. There was no swooping about it. There's a moment of awkward silence before she turns and walks down the hall. I continue to watch long after she's rounded the corner and probably disappeared inside her office. Justin steps up beside me. How'd it go in there? He asks, motioning to the conference room. I clap my hand on his shoulder and give him my best smile. Great, I say. In fact, it looks like we have a lot of research to do. Tell me, what do you know about YouTube? A plan begins to form in my head as he prattles on excitedly, and even though it makes me feel a little underhanded, it takes hold. I need this job. I need to figure out a way to make this work for me. Brad may think Evie's the right one for the position, but that's only because he hasn't seen what I can do. If I have to do a little homework and learn everything there is to learn, and more, about my client list and hers, that's exactly what I'm going to do. There is no way I'm losing to evil.
Chapter 11. Evie. Date, Friday, October 30th at 4:12 p.m. From Kylie Salisbury to Carter Aaron, Evelyn Abbey. Subject, Department Retreat. Hi, Evie and Carter. Brad has asked that the two of you be in charge of the annual department retreat up in Big Bear. It is back on the calendar for January 14th through the 16th. As Evie knows, I've organized it the last 2 years, so let me know when is a good time for the three of us to sit down and go over the format, activities, and any other relevant details. Best, Kylie. I've read the email about 7 times, and still am not sure I understand it. I walk into Daryl's office and have her confirm I've read it correctly. I call Amelia in to have her verify that I am not, in fact, reading this wrong. Wasn't this canceled? Is it back on? But this time with senior agents in charge of the itinerary? Am I having a stroke? Apparently I'm not. On top of everything else on our plates, Carter and I have been given an assistant's task. Organize the departmental retreat. Brad is a piece of work. Since this isn't coming from Brad himself, I have no way of knowing the subtext, but I'm sure there is one. It's possible Kylie dropped the ball somewhere, but it's more possible that this is Brad's first twist in the P&D Hunger Games. I lean against Daryl's door, rubbing my face. This means I'm going to have to talk to him, I say. 2 weeks ago, this wouldn't have seemed like such a bad thing because, let's be honest, I wanted to talk my way into his pants. But after Carter's pouty blow-off, let's have dinner. Oh, wait, you got a better list than I did. No dinner for you. I'm beginning to think the best strategy is just to never, ever interact with him at the office again. Which, surprisingly, wouldn't be that hard. With new clients and new coworkers on top of my normal schedule, I've been completely swamped. In the past week and a half, I've arrived at work by 8 and stayed long after the office is empty, had 9 lunch meetings, 11 meetings after work over drinks, and wall-to-wall clients during work hours. I've barely seen Carter, except for when I watch him leave his office and find a way to enjoy the view from behind all the way down the hall. I have a short break between a lunch meeting and an off-site and hope I can catch him for a few minutes. Because the odds of me wrestling him out of anger or lust are roughly equivalent, I decide to call in Daryl's IOU for ditching me at Steph's party and make her act as chaperone. Possibly witness. I am the best of friends. We stop outside his office door and I lift my fist, giving a single, tentative knock. Normally, Carter isn't really a closed-door kind of guy. From what I've seen so far, he's always in the hall, talking to people, or has two or three other agents in his office. I get that it's just a way we do business differently. I tend to be to the point. Friendly, but brief, whereas he chats and wanders. Everyone likes Carter. I know he's been crazy busy this week, too, but he always seems to have a moment to say hi to someone. To stop and socialize for a spell. I realize this makes our styles complementary, and I get a warm little pull in my stomach. Wouldn't it be nice if we could collaborate? Wouldn't it be nice if he didn't immediately turn into a threatened, competitive jackass? "Stop it," Daryl says, and I look over to her.
"Stop what?"
"You're fidgeting. You're supposed to be a badass here. Badasses don't fidget. And don't give me that face. This is exactly why you brought me." "Okay, right, right." I close my eyes, summoning my inner badass. I'm Uma Thurman in Kill Bill, Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2, Sigourney Weaver in Aliens. Because let's be honest, that's really where she came into her own. Fascinating that it's the sequels where those two really... "Will you focus?" When he calls out,
"Come in."
I'm a little taken aback at the way his voice sounds. Deep and quiet, not at all his normal, easygoing tone. It reminds me of how he sounded against me, on my bed, and I want to walk repeatedly into the nearest wall. This whole situation would be about a million times easier if I didn't want to kiss him as much as I want to shove him. Pushing open the door, I look up to find him sitting at his desk, hair messy, glasses crooked. He's oddly rumpled.
"Hey, Evie."
His expression is hard to read. Surprised, maybe. Nervous? A little. Good. Carter looks behind me to where Daryl has just walked right into my back. "Thanks for the warning," she says, rubbing her nose. I should be more careful. She paid a lot of money for that nose.
"I don't think we've officially met,"
Carter says, and stands to walk around the desk, reaching out to shake Daryl's hand.
"Carter Aaron, new guy."
"Daryl Jordan, Sagittarius."
"Aries,"
he says with a sly grin.
"You know, that makes us most compatible out of all the zodiac signs."
My God in heaven. Daryl smiles, charmed.
"Convenient, considering you're my new best friend for knowing that."
I turn to her, eyes wide. "Traitor."
"I didn't peg you for an astrology buff," I say, not sure which of them I should glare at first.
"Big horoscope reader, Carter?" "Your competitive moon is eclipsing my happy place sun, jackhole."
"Not much these days, I'm afraid,"
he says, expression serious again.
"My mom is really into astrology and used to read us our horoscopes every morning during breakfast. Whenever I hear someone mention it, I get a little homesick."
Son of a... That might be the sweetest thing I've ever heard. Daryl swoons visibly. Bringing her was obviously a mistake. I wonder if anyone would notice if I gently shoved her out of the room.
Unfortunately, I don't get to see her as often as I'd like, but I'm hoping soon. For the holidays, at least, anyway.
He straightens his glasses, but doesn't bother to do anything about his hair. Motioning for us to have a seat, he walks back around to his chair.
"I've been buried in contracts. What's up?"
"I gather you've seen Kylie's email?"
I ask. He shakes his head and turns to his monitor.
"How are you liking it here?"
Daryl asks.
"Getting to know everyone?"
I hear the double click of his mouse and watch him quickly scan the email.
"Yeah,"
he says slowly.
"Just making friends, getting the lay of the land. Everyone was a little standoffish at first, but I think I've overcome it. Feels like a really good group."
Just like I did, he rereads the message a few times and then looks up at me.
"Is this serious?"
Shrugging, I say, I assume so. Brad doesn't think we have enough to do? That, or he thinks Kylie did a shitty job in years past. Carter looks up at me disapprovingly. She's good, Evie. Daryl pinches my arm, and seriously, what the hell? Weren't we just coming up with hypotheses about why we've been asked to do this? Ignoring Daryl's attempt to keep me calm, I glare at him. I'm sure she is. Maybe retreats just aren't her thing. He laughs dryly, shaking his head as he reads the email again. You have such a chip on your shoulder about her. This takes me a few breaths to process. In the 2 whole weeks he's been here, when has he ever witnessed me having a problem with Kylie? And why does he feel the need to defend her to me? My instinct is to pick up his stapler and launch it at his head, but a good agent keeps a lid on their temper, unless it's really necessary to unleash the fury. A great agent doesn't have a temper, but can unleash the fury when necessary. The difference is everything. I'm still working on being great. Okay, then, I say calmly, brushing off Daryl's grip. I can tell you're overwhelmed with work. I'm happy to organize this alone, if you prefer. Daryl shakes her head. Evie, I don't think he's saying he... I'm not overwhelmed, Carter cuts in. Of course you're not, I say meaningfully, and his cheeks go pink at the implication that he's got a light list. I glance around his office. It's certainly more lived in than it was. His walls are covered with framed photos of landmarks on the East Coast, pictures of him with clients, his diploma, a framed copy of his first signed contract. There's a plant in the corner, and instead of a couch, he has 2 chairs with colorful pillows, a giant ottoman in between. It looks cozy and warm. Somewhere you'd sit and chat, make friends, maybe sign a contract or two. Why does he have to be so damn smooth with everything? I can tell he's not going to say anything now that I've just dropped a bomb of snark, and Daryl seems to have given up hope of running interference. Anyway, I say as breezily as possible, I just came down here to see if you wanted to go chat with Kylie real quick about the retreat. Pushing back from his desk to stand, he wordlessly gestures for me to lead us onward. At least we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Kylie doesn't really give us anything I didn't already know. It's a retreat for the features department and support staff. We drink, we do team-building activities, we drink. We listen to Brad tell boring stories where he is the starring attraction, we drink. Basically, it's a giant drink fest with a few team-building games thrown in, which seems easy enough to organize, especially given that we'll have an events coordinator on site. I'm now taking my peeved with a sigh of relieved. I can't help but notice that Kylie directs nearly all of her attention to Carter while she recounts the activities she's put together the last 2 years. But I can't blame her, either. I also quite enjoy looking at Carter. But since Carter has pointed out that I have such a chip on my shoulder about Kylie, I mean, what even... I work to look as unaffected by her obvious crush on him as possible. Under normal circumstances, I would ask questions and redirect her attention back to the two of us, but since this situation is completely abnormal, and as long as there is food and booze at this event, no one is going to care about other specifics, I can't be bothered to get too worked up. It all seems pretty straightforward, and we're about to walk back to our respective offices when Kylie stops us with a whispered, "Guys?" We turn back to face her. She looks almost apologetic and glances around us to make sure no one is listening. That was all the regular stuff, but just remember, this is Brad's favorite weekend all year. Add to that the merge and that people are paying attention to how he runs things, and he really expects it to be, like, a big deal, okay? Her wobbly smile tells us that she's relieved she's not in charge anymore, and it will be a bloodbath if we mess it up. Carter must sense it, too, because he stops me on our way back down the hall. Would you have any time to talk this out? He says in a rush, looking the slightest bit queasy. I know we're both busy, but she made it sound like this was pretty intense, and I've never been to one of Brad's retreats.
I can clear my afternoon if I need to, if you can, of course. I'm already shaking my head. I'm heading out early to catch someone on set. I'll finish up around 7 or so. I pause, then wonder if I'm going to regret what I say next. We can meet after, unless you have something to do. After is perfect. I'll clear my schedule and meet you wherever you are. For a moment, I think about having him just meet me at my place, but then I realize what a giant mistake that would be. How about Boa, 7:30? I suggest instead. He's already putting it into his phone. 7:30. I'll get us a reservation and see you there. Thanks, Evie. Carter is seated when I arrive, and the hostess walks me to the table. He's changed out of his work clothes and now has on a white, button-down shirt and soft, dark jeans. The effect on me is immediate. Because he looks like any other guy out on the street, it's both easier and harder to be with him right now. Easier because I don't feel the need to try to match his charisma like I do every day at the office. Harder because he looks so much like the potential boyfriend version of Carter. It sucks that the dynamic between us is so strained now. I sit, unfolding my napkin and placing it on my lap. We both thank the waiter when he fills our water glasses. To my surprise, Carter declines any sort of cocktail. So, I do too. The waiter lists the specials and says he'll be back once we've had time to look over the menu. The silence stretches between us. The contrast between this dinner and our first together is pretty stark. And the longer we're quiet, the harder it is to find a single word to say. I could really use that cocktail. The sun is setting through the windows, and I look out at the street, marveling at how quiet this intersection gets when the office is shut down for the night. I glance over to see him watching me, and he quickly looks away, back down to scan the menu. His eyes are so bright behind the glasses. I think I forgot how green they are, how perfect his mouth is. So, he says, and I realize it's my turn to be caught staring. So, his attention is so steady, I wish I had a Carter thought decoder ring. His lips tilt up into a knowing half smile. How are things? I burst out laughing, and his smile grows, morphing into the real deal. The goofy, crooked smile, not the flashy work one. We probably should have ordered drinks, he says. I am so relieved that his easy frankness is back that I nearly want to launch myself across the table. Yeah, like 100. Nervously, I straighten my spoon and knife beside each other on the table. Carter, I start. I'm really glad we did this. I wish we could start over in some ways. He nods, swallowing a sip of his water. Me too. Though maybe not all of it. Some of it wasn't too bad. My face heats at his meaningful smile. I agree. And the work situation sucks, but I think we can work better together. Relief seems to wash over him, and he reaches across the table to take my hand. I agree. We haven't been great. I really do think they could have positions for both of us here. The more I look, the more I realize there's a lot of dead weight in the features department. But it isn't us. Obviously, I haven't been there as long, he says with a nod in my direction, and I appreciate the small acknowledgement. But yeah, I agree. He leans forward. Our strengths are so complementary. Rose and Ashton might be better suited for New York. They love to do the theater stuff. It's just that there isn't that much of it out here. Maybe they would want to be transferred if given the choice. Exactly. It loosens something for us to agree on this one tiny point. I feel a fondness seeping back in, and his smile is even easier now. The waiter stops at our table to take our orders, and we let go of each other's hand. But once he's gone, we immediately look back to each other. There's so much good in all of this, he says quietly. I like features. I like you. I hate the situation, but I sort of like being at P&D. I'm glad.
And I like you, too.
I had a really good time that night,
he says. And he leans in, taking my hand again. I don't think I ever got to tell you that. This makes me laugh, and his eyes widen in surprise and amusement at the sound of it. I had an inkling. He clears his throat.
I'm sorry if it felt underhanded that I volunteered to take Dan.
It's fine, I tell him. I like Dan, and we've worked well together in the past, but your list needs it more. His eyebrow twitches, and I realize how unfiltered that came out. What is it about Carter that brings out my competitive side so immediately? I really didn't mean that to sound rude, I say, wanting him to believe me. I'm just being honest. I think you can sign him easily. With Dan, you just need to call him up and ask him what he's looking for. He lets go of my hand to take a quick sip of water, shaking his head. With the loss of contact, the intimacy of the vibe at the table is immediately flipped on its head.
Dan will talk about it when he's ready, he says. I know a bit about how he works. He wants to feel like he's in control, and calling him will just make me seem pushy.
Carter has amazing instincts, but right now he's wrong. He just is. Dan likes being chased a little. I've worked with him, and I know he doesn't like to be the one making calls. He wants to be the one choosing whether or not to answer. I just really think, Christ, Evie, just let me do my job, okay? He snaps. I open my mouth, and a few garbled sounds come out before I mumble a quiet, sure, of course. I can see immediately that he regrets his tone, but it's too late. The tension is back with a vengeance. Our food comes and we bend to our plates, eating in silence. Carter puts his fork down after a few bites, leaning in.
Evie.
No, seriously, it's okay. I put on my best smile because I really don't want him to feel micromanaged by me. This is an impossible situation. If I help him, I could lose a job. If he doesn't fight for a better list, he could. And there's basically no way we can solve this with kissing, no matter how much I'd like to. You're right. I was being pushy. You do your thing. Carter nods, and I decide to move on. Now let's talk about that retreat. Dinner turned out as well as could be hoped. We have a solid plan for the event in January, and we each have a list of piddly homework items we need to find time for before we meet up again. As we walk out, one comment leads to another, and Carter is telling me a story about how Michael got Steph a kinky cast-making kit for their anniversary so they could craft a mold of his penis and build her a toy for whenever she travels. Instead, she thought he was subtly telling her he had cancer and found a way for her to remember him when he was gone. I laugh so hard, Carter wraps his hand around my forearm and keeps it there for a moment to make sure I'm steady. I hate how funny he is, and I hate how much I want him to keep touching me. I hate this entire situation. We pull apart and keep walking away from sunset up Doheny. It's warm, but not with the cloying death haze of early October. I look over at him as he takes a deep, calming breath. It's nice out, isn't it? I say. He looks up at the sky.
I wonder whether I'll ever live somewhere where I can see all the stars.
That's what vacations are for. He grins.
Vacation? Was ist das?
This makes me laugh. I know. I guess we can't really expect much of that this year. He gives me a smile that's both sweet and a little sad, and then shakes himself out of it. Pointing up the hill, he says,
I live just a few blocks up.
I look over his shoulder and off in that direction. His apartment is that way. His bed. I've never been to his place. I mean, of course I haven't. We had a relationship for a weekend, if that. Even though it feels like a much bigger event in my romantic life than it actually was. I can't decide if that's internally meaningful in a rallying, don't give up way, or in a pathetic, this is the sad state of your romantic landscape way. Regardless, he hasn't said this as a lead up to asking whether I want to walk up there with him, because we both know there's no way that can happen, even if we both clearly grapple with the unsaid.
Under other circumstances, we would totally be banging there tonight. And, given what I know, 1, we're both stressed out of our minds. 2, Carter is fun and funny. 3, Carter has a great penis. The sex would undoubtedly be stellar. But instead, we exchange a lingering hug and part ways on the sidewalk. Watching him disappear up the tree-shrouded hill, I can't decide if tonight was a step forward or sideways. Should I be grateful for sideways? Carter sparks these enormous emotions in me. Most of them good. And then I resent the situation all over again. But then he gets defensive and weird, and I basically want to strangle him. All we can do is try to make the best of things. I like Carter, but simply put, neither of us is doing this job because we like coming in second. Signing Adam Elliott and Sarah Hill was a huge coup for me, and Carter's got to be feeling the pressure. Of course he wants to land Dan. Maybe I should try to show a little more empathy, and eventually, we might even find a way to be friends. As if the universe finds this all completely hilarious, just as I climb into my car, my phone chimes with an email from a VIP sender. It's from Dave Cyrus, my entertainment contact at the Hollywood Vine. Date, Friday, October 30th at 9:42 p.m. From Dave Cyrus to Evelyn Abbey. Subject, Dan Prince. Evie, reaching out to hear if Dan is headed onto your list. That's the buzz, at least. Likely to run with something either way, but if you know something, I'd like to wait for the scoop and run a hot buzz feature when he signs on. Let me know. Dave. With a groan, I let my head fall back against the headrest, closing my eyes. This is huge. Dave has heard from somewhere that Dan is signing with me. A hot buzz feature means print edition of the monthly magazine, with the best circulation of any trade journal in the industry, as well as a huge spread in the online edition. It would be great promo for Dan, and an amazing carrot to dangle to get him to join P&D. I am 98% positive I could call Dan right now, find out what he's thinking he's going to do, and convince him to join my list. But I can't, because I am not a backstabbing monster. Date, Friday, October 30th at 9:47 p.m. From Evelyn Abbey to Dave Cyrus. Subject regarding Dan Prince. Dave, it kills me to have to say this, but a colleague is angling to sign Dan, and I couldn't in good conscience use this to snag him. It would be a huge, huge favor to me if you would extend the same offer to him. His name is Carter Aaron. He's new to P&D, and we were lucky enough to land him in the merge. He's spectacular. I would owe you big time. His email is caaron@pricedickelpartners.com. Evie. Date, Friday, October 30th at 9:59 p.m. From Dave Cyrus to Evelyn Abbey. Subject regarding Dan Prince. Are you going soft in your old age? I'm teasing. Sure, I'll reach out to Carter. Drop me a line when you want to grab a drink. Dave.
Chapter 12, Carter. You have got to be kidding. I stare at my phone, mouth open, and toothpaste running down my chin until the screen fades to black. After spitting into the sink, I bring up the email again. Unbelievable. Dave Cyrus wants to talk to me about Dan Prince. I type out a quick reply telling him I'm definitely up for a chat and include all of my contact information. Hollywood Vine has the largest distribution of any Hollywood daily. Going after Dan with this kind of thing in my back pocket could almost guarantee landing him. Landing him and getting this kind of press is exactly what I need right out of the gate. It could literally change everything. Evie was right. It's time to make my move. I've done every bit of research I can on Dan Prince. I know he wants to feel like he's the one calling the shots, despite surrounding himself with an entourage of school friends who influence almost every one of his decisions, a constant battle, and, I'm guessing, a cause of some of the drama he's rumored to be having with his current agent.
He regrets his biggest role to date, portraying a time-traveling vigilante, but he's smart enough to never, ever allude to that during interviews. I know who he's dated, what kind of music he likes, and that he still can't distinguish between your and your on Twitter. Last year, he slept with his co-star's now ex-wife, and when he was 20, he spent a week at a Vegas brothel. However, he's never late, always respectful in interviews, and never a problem on set. Some of that might seem unimportant, but I don't make money if my clients aren't busy working. An impossible task if the actor in question is a nightmare and nobody wants to be around them. It's Saturday, but I'm still the new guy in town, which means that while the office might technically be closed, there's no such thing as a day off, not even if it's Halloween, especially given Dave's email. I need to get on this Dan Prince thing now. A glance at my watch shows it's just after 9, and I'll have plenty of time to get in a quick call to Dan before brunch with the VP of Development at Paramount. Normally, I'd have Justin set up a phone call, but this doesn't feel like it can wait. The line rings once before being answered by a gruff voice. "Dan Prince's phone," it says. "This is Carter Aaron."
"Aaron, hey. This is Caleb, Dan's manager."
"Caleb, I remember you. We met in New York. We had drinks at that little place
in Brooklyn, right? I remember. I kicked your ass at pool that night."
"You did, you little hustler. Still not sure I'll ever be man enough for a rematch."
"That's right," he's saying. I can hear him clapping on the other end of the phone, and I know I've hit my mark. Caleb heavily influences a lot of Dan's decisions, and having him on my side is another point in my favor.
"Listen, Caleb, I was wondering if I could talk to Dan."
"He's on set now, reshoots and shit, but I'll tell him you called. I'm sure he'll be glad to hear it."
I silently fist pump into the air. "I appreciate it. Let him know I'm available all weekend. No need to wait till Monday."
"Sure thing. You stay out of pool halls," he says, laughing at his own joke.
I smile as the line disconnects. 40 minutes to drive 6 miles on a Saturday? Someone help me. There were just as many cars on the road in New York, but there we had buses and the subway. We could walk. Everything was interconnected, and taking public transportation was nearly always easier than driving. Within the LA city limits, there are 181 miles of freeway and over 6,000 miles of surface streets. I know, I've Googled it, and yet I still sit in traffic wherever I go. Which, of course, means I'm in traffic on Sunset when my phone rings through the Bluetooth. I jump, clamoring to answer, and hoping it's the call from Dan I've been waiting for, only to see my mom's name flash on the screen. I answer only because it's better than putting it off until later. "Hi, Mom." "How are you, baby? Are you in your car?"
"I am. I'm meeting someone for breakfast and stuck in traffic. In fact, I don't know how long I'll be able to talk. I'm expecting a call, and it's kind of important. I might have to switch over."
"On a Saturday?"
"On a Saturday," I say, knowing what comes next.
"You know, you wouldn't be working Saturdays if you had a normal job."
I ignore this, reaching up to rub my forehead.
"Is the call from Jonah?" she asks.
I pause, confused for a beat.
"No, why would he be calling me?"
She's silent in response, and too late I realize what she's thinking. "Because he's your brother, and you live in the same city, not to mention I specifically told you to call him." But instead she says, "I haven't heard from him in a week, and he's not answering his phone. It goes straight to that obnoxious message." This makes me smile, because his bare-bones voicemail greeting really is horrible.
"Yeah, it's Jonah. You know what to do."
It does me good to know that it makes even our own doting mother want to punch him in the throat.
"I'm sure he'll call you back when he can," I tell her. "You're the one always reminding me how busy he is."
"This is different," she says, voice tight. "He's terrible about visiting, but he always answers my calls. I've called 4 times without hearing back from him, and now the phone's not ringing at all. It just goes straight to voicemail. Your father is so worried about him."
In the background, I hear my dad shout, "No, Dinah, I'm not." I take a deep breath.
"Mom, what do you want me to..." "I want you to call him," she cuts in, "and if he doesn't answer, I want you to drive up there and make sure he's okay."
My preferred response to this would be to tell her, honestly, that I don't have time to go out to Malibu today. But the conversation plays out like a chess game.